Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Serradidio. I am your host. I am a licensed clinical social worker. I've been in the mental health field for about 8 years now. I work with individuals, couples, families. I work with everything from anxiety, depression, hoarding, domestic violence, and sexual trauma. Tonight, I will be doing the show on two case studies that both have anxiety involved in them. And why I picked these two case studies is I wanted to really show you, the community, how anxiety can manifest in two different ways in two different people. Again, to reinforce, a lot of the times that I've spoken through this show, each person is so different. Each case is so different. So when a client comes into my office each week, yes, they might have the same, similar symptoms, similar issues going on, but you really have to look at each person, each event, as a separate case, as a new way of looking at it. My first client is a 32-year-old woman, divorced with two young girls. She just started her own business. She reports her panic attacks have been started about 3 weeks ago, and they only happen right before she goes to sleep every night. My other case is a 24-year-old single male who works in fashion. He has panic attacks on a daily basis, especially at work. And how the anxiety manifests in his case is when he's at work and he's having an anxiety attack, he becomes very angry. And what happens is he has a lot of outbursts at work, which ends up getting him terminated. So his anxiety is actually really preventing him from being employed. Now, both of these cases have anxiety in them, but the way that the anxiety is expressed is two different ways. Let's start with the first woman, 32-year-old woman who only gets the anxiety at night, right before she falls asleep. Now, what I would say if she came into my office, is again, how long? She said this started for about 3 weeks. I would also want to explore what has been going on the last 6 months. Sometimes we can say, did something happen yesterday within the last week? I would like to start with the last 6 months, any traumatic events, any big life events, such as, I know she said she's divorced. I'm not sure how long she has been divorced. Divorce, a move, a new job, and she actually said she just started her new business. So I see already two things in divorce and starting a new job. Having children, moving, going to a new school, these are all very huge life events that can cause a lot of anxiety. Some of them are positive, so some, they cause anxiety, it's a good health move. But I think some of them that are negative, also the anxiety can come to. So I would also want to explore with her, when was her divorce? I mean, if it was recent, then we can understand that there's some anxiety going on, and then I would really be exploring what happened during the divorce? What is that? Was she really able to grieve the divorce? Because I don't think a lot of people understand that a divorce is a death of a relationship, is a death of a dream, a death of an ideal. So I feel that you really need to mourn the loss of it. And as I've said in other shows, we've done the 5 stages of grief. So I would definitely want to go through, what stage is she in? Is there denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance, and really exploring those stages with her and having her find an awareness of, okay, let's see, where I am in this process. And as I said before on my past show about the 5 stages of grief, they don't go in any, particular order. So each case is so different. So, it might start off with depression, it might start off with denial, or it might start off with anger. And I'm also wondering, when we get to the next case of the young man, his anxiety manifests in anger. So I think it's really exploring that. And what I find with my clients is I really want to explore every area of their life so we can get a really clear picture of what's going on. So let's see. She said panic attacks started a couple of weeks ago, and it happens before she's going to sleep. And she's having difficulty sleeping with these panic attacks and also difficulty falling asleep. And then I would want to explore, what are her thoughts before she goes to sleep? Is she able to keep track of them? I know sometimes we're not aware of them. They're just kind of racing thoughts, and it's that inner monologue that goes on in our heads. that we kind of don't pay attention. But I think this is the time you really want to pay attention to what are your thoughts before you're going to sleep? What are you concerned about? Is this maybe a subconscious thing, an unconscious? Do you really realize that these thoughts are coming to your mind? So I would say, okay, you know, again, getting your journal if you don't have one already, and just jot down a couple of things. You know, are you worried about your business? Are you, you know, is it anything with the divorce? Is it something that happened that day at work? Or is something else going on? I said, you also have two young girls. And I'm wondering what is going on with that? Are there any concerns? Is any, you know, any parent has concerns about their child, but also saying, okay, is there things before you go to bed? Because I find a lot of times, sometimes people before they go to bed kind of have a list of what they've done for the day and then start kind of making a list in their head what they want to do the next day. And that's great to be able to kind of put things together. But I think before you're about to go to sleep, you want to make sure you're not kind of charging your mind up, because even though you can go through, okay, tomorrow I have to finish this paperwork, I have to get this, I have to get that, it starts kind of initiating some anxiety of, okay, when can I get this done? And then so your mind is not going into a relaxed sleep mode. It's actually now you're amping it up, saying, okay, I'm going to do this, then I'm going to do this. And then, you know, as usual, your mind will start thinking about different ways of how you're going to do this. So I would actually maybe 2 hours before you go to bed, if you could do this, if you want to write down what you've done during the day and then what you need to do the next day. And then about an hour before you go to bed, I would say, you know, be able to sit in your room, in your bed. No television if you can. Try, you know, maybe if your two young girls can be asleep by then. So the house can be kind of quiet, and make it almost like a ritual before you go to sleep. So you start training your body, saying, you know what, this is what's going to be happening. This is how I'm going to, what I'm going to do before I go to bed. So it's almost like your mind will start telling your body, okay, let's start winding down. This is what we're going to do. And I find a lot when my clients come in with anxiety, this is what it is. It's a lot of mind over matter, and we can do this. But the mind is a tricky thing. I mean, it's a brilliant machine, the mind, and how it works. But I think sometimes it can get very tricky, and it can be also very powerful. Your thoughts are very powerful. So I think also being very aware of what you're thinking, that's why I would start that 1 hour. And I know a lot of people say, I don't have that time. I don't have that luxury of being able to have quiet time for about an hour. So what I would say is there's also an exercise that I've learned. It's about grounding, detaching from emotional pain. And I got this from Seeking Safety, a treatment manual. I'm going to read the definition right now. What is grounding? Grounding is a set of simple strategies to detach from emotional pain. For example, drug cravings, self-harm impulses, anger, sadness, anxiety. Distraction works by focusing outward on the external world rather than inward towards the self. You can also think of it as a distraction, centering, a safe place, looking outward, or healthy detachment. And what I like about that is what we were saying, you know, what I was saying before is when you're going to bed and you're planning on what you're doing tomorrow, you're focusing inward. You're focusing on what you have to do. So it starts getting the mind, the body, the heart rate starts building up. So by focusing on outside things, it kind of takes us outside of our feelings, outside of our thoughts, and gives us strength. With grounding, when you really do it is when you're very upset, when there's a lot of anxiety, there's a lot of emotional pain, and it's a way of kind of taking yourself out of the pain, detaching it, and being able to get an objective view on it. So you have more kind of a control over your feelings. And also you're able to train yourself that this is a safe place. Because what I find with anxiety a lot when my clients come in, it is so overwhelming and it is so crippling that when it hits, it's so life and death. You feel like you're never going to get out of it. And then that amps the anxiety even more. And you get even more panicked, and you're like, oh my, you know, what is this? What's going on? So by doing this grounding, you're able to kind of take yourself outside the anxiety and say, okay, this is the anxiety. This doesn't define me. This is me. Myself is not the anxiety. And then when you can really look at the anxiety for what it is, you start getting your power back. So what it says, it kind of, the grounding anchors you to the present and to the reality. How we would start out with grounding, there are some guidelines. It can be done anytime, any place, anywhere, and the great thing is no one has to know about it. So it's not something, I know sometimes if we're at work or we're on the train, we're on the bus, or that someone that we meet causes anxiety, you can't sometimes get out of that place. You know, so I think with the grounding, what it can do is it's something you can do with yourself that no one has to know about it, so you don't have to feel embarrassed or feel like you can't do this. So even if you're in a small place or you're around someone like maybe your boss or somebody who causes this anxiety or triggers it, this is definitely, grounding can be done anywhere. And when you use grounding, as I said, it's when you're faced with a trigger, if you're having a flashback. And also they're saying a lot of times grounding is also with substance abuse. If you're trying to stop abusing substances with a craving, this is also another great thing to kind of pull yourself out of that moment, pull yourself out of that impulsive behavior and be able to say, okay, this is emotion, this is anxiety going on. This isn't really what I want. This is just some sort of impulse. And I think once the emotional pain, the overwhelming, the fear, the anxiety starts going away, you start feeling better and you start kind of saying, okay, I can actually go through this. There's actually something called SUDS, a subjective unit of distress. Now, what I do this a lot of times with my client. It's a scale from 1 to 10. So 1 would be there's no anxiety, there's no cravings, there's no depression, there's no anger. And 10 would be really out of the control, top of above the roof, really hard anxiety. And the way you do this is you're able to kind of give yourself a personal inventory of where your symptoms are, where your pain is. And why I would want to do this is, in the beginning, it might sound like, oh, it's really overwhelming. You know, you might say, oh, I'm at an 8, that's really high, or I'm at a 10, that's the highest. But I think as you're going through with the grounding and with these different type of exercises, you'll be able to see maybe in 15 minutes that 10 is a 9. And that is a very, very powerful tool, because I want, with what we want to do with the anxiety or with any of these symptoms, is we want to give you the confidence and take away the hopelessness so you can see that light at the end of the tunnel. And that's what I try to tell a lot of my clients. Focus on the long-term goal. Focus on that light at the end of the tunnel and keep it kind of tunnel vision towards that. And a lot of things are going to be coming up on the side and they're going to distract you and they're going to kind of cut down on your confidence and make you start self-doubting and start questioning. We don't want to let those thoughts in. And I know it's easier said than done, but what we want to do is we want to say, no, I know these thoughts are coming up, but it doesn't help to think about them. It only kind of triggers and fuels the anxiety. So by doing the grounding, you're saying, you know what, you're also teaching yourself that you're able to say no. You know, even if you're on a bus or something and this anxiety comes up, you're about to say, you know what, no. And then maybe a couple hours down the line, I'm not sure, sometimes anxiety can last all day. Sometimes it goes in and out, spurts, and we don't know when it's going to hit. And I think that's what triggers a lot of people. And then they start isolating. Because they said, you know, I don't know when it's going to hit. Sometimes it was only when they went to the store or they heard a certain song or they saw a certain thing that would trigger the anxiety. But then as the mind goes, we start panicking, like, oh, what happens if this happens and this? And then we kind of feed into the anxiety. So I think that's what's really great about the grounding, that this is a tool you can take anywhere. So it's hard to prepare yourself in life for everything. You know, we can't do that. And I think that's what causes more anxiety. And even with substance abuse and relapse, it's hard to say, yes, you have the best intentions of doing things, but sometimes you can, you know, maybe meet someone who was in your history, who's a trigger, someone you used to use with, someone you didn't expect to see, and that's something that could trigger this. So again, keeping the scale from 1 to 10, try and do it every couple hours or an hour, depending how it makes you feel, to see if while you're doing these grounding exercises, if it works. And what they say is you keep your eyes open, and you'll be if you can be in a room or if you're in a train or in the bathroom or outside, you want to look around, and if the lights are not on, you want to turn the lights on, and the idea is you really want to be in touch with what's going on now, the present. I'm going to breathe through this. I'm going to see, this is my moment. I'm not going to think about the past. I'm not going to let my mind kind of drift back, and I'm not going to let my mind drift to the beginning, to the future, saying, okay, what happens then if I do this and somebody walks in? We're going to say, you know what, I'm right here, I'm right now. And I'm going to start breathing, and I'm going to start trying to calm down. Again, we're going to start with rating your mood, where you are before and after the test, and feel how it works. And then you want to start saying, okay, there's going to be no talking about negative feelings. We're not going to talk about, you know, things that happened. There's going to try not to be any judgment. And you want to almost not allow any of the negativity to be around you, because that's not, we don't want that involved in what's going on. And again, what I said, staying neutral, no judgments, no good, no bad. Just make sure you're looking around, looking at things. As I say, for example, if you're looking at the walls are blue, but I don't like blue. It reminds me of depression. Don't let your mind kind of wander on those little tangents. We want to stay focused, simple, and concise. So what it is, what the grounding is, it's not the same as relaxation. It's more active, as I said. It focuses on distraction strategies and is intended to help extreme negative feelings. It is also believed to be more effective for PTSD than relaxation training, which I think is really amazing, because it's very hard. And I think people who do suffer from PTSD, the hypervigilance, the anger, the anxiety is so high. And, you know, you never know when if a flashback is going to strike. So this is a powerful, powerful tool. Now, I'm saying we're going to use this with the woman who has problems before you're sleeping. But we can also use this for the 24-year-old single man who works in fashion. And he has panic attacks at work and gets very angry, and it causes a lot of conflict at work. He was screaming at his coworkers at big team meetings. If someone disagreed with him, he'd turn into, you know, very upset and storm out. And what it really was is, yes, it was masked as anger, but his anxiety was so high at a 10 that he went into that fight or flight mode. And it almost became, you know, I have to defend myself, I have to protect myself. And a lot of people, anger comes up. And that's what kind of shows that a lot of times when there's anger, there's depression, there's anxiety. So we really wanted to also, with this client, is work through the anger. And what I would do with him is really explore, when does the anger happen at other times? Yes, it's very prevalent at work. That's definitely a number one trigger. But when else in his life? Can he look back to when he was a child and the first time he really said, wow, that was pretty scary how angry I was? Or also to say, what were his parents like? Or what was his grandmother like? What were his friends like? Maybe a significant role model in his life. How did they express anger? Some might have been healthy and some might not have. And I find a lot of, with the clients that I work with, that have grown up in a house where there's been substance abuse, either drugs or alcohol, there's a lot of anger, there's a lot of anxiety, and there's a lot of depression, because when you grow up in such an area where there's no stability, it almost, there's nothing constant. And I think as a child growing up, you need that safe environment where you're able to explore who you are, explore your interests, kind of, you know, through play, figuring out what you like to do. Do you like to play with dolls? Do you like to play baseball? Do you like to play football? And what I find happens when you grow up in a house where there's substance abuse or even domestic violence, sexual trauma, emotional abuse, that you're not allowed, you don't get that. You're never really provided. Yes, it's sometimes things, you know, it's not always bad, and sometimes, and you do have a safe environment, and the parents can be very loving. But I think when you don't have that safe environment or that platform to grow, to explore your attachment issues growing up, your safety concerns are really become very blurred, and they're not encouraged, and they're not developed in the right way. So I think that's why I would definitely explore the anger in his house, and if there was any substance abuse growing up, or any domestic violence or emotional abuse. And I think that's one thing you'd want to explore a little bit too, and then see how long has he been angry for. And with the young woman, also it's saying what things are concerning her. You know, like as I said before, with the divorce, her two young girls, starting a new business. These are all things we want to become aware of. And I find with anxiety, with anger, when you're in that place, you really want to kind of, not before while you're doing the grounding, but before, during, in maybe in therapy or in your own, being able to really write down and say, okay, these are some things that could be triggering me. They might not be, but just in case, let's really explore it so nothing is kind of a secret. So you're very, very kind of aware of what's going on. So let's start the ways to start with mental grounding. What you're going to do is you're wherever you are, you're going to take a look around. You're going to start breathing, diaphragmic breathing, really grounding in through the nose, out through the mouth. You want to make sure you're not hyperventilating. You want it to be slow and controlled, kind of making sure your heart rate starts going down. And it's actually proven when you breathe from your diaphragm, it slows down your heart rate. What it is, there's the phrenic nerve, and then there's the vagus nerve. The phrenic nerve is one of the pair of nerves designated left and right that sends signals between the brain to the diaphragm. When the diaphragm moves, it pulls the air into and pushes out of the lungs. The nerves receive automatic signals to keep the body breathing, but people can also exert some control over the movement of the diaphragm, allowing them to do things like hold their breath. So I think what happens with the diaphragm, when you're starting to control your breathing, it has a physical reason why it does been proven to slow down your heart rate. And then the vagus nerve supplies fibers to all the organs. And what it is from the neck down to the second segment of the colon, and it also controls a few muscles. But I think what it does is it really helps you, again, controlling your breathing, slowing down your heart rate, and it's different muscle movements, which is very, very important to why people can do so. To be specific, the vagus nerve acts to lower the heart rate. Now, I found this in Wikipedia underneath the vagus nerve, so I think it's very important to, if you wanted to look this up. It also reduces the heart rate, blood pressure. I mean, it's very, very important for people who have different gastrointestinal illnesses and viral and different things. It really is a great way to kind of show yourself that you can get some control over what's going on. So let's go back to the grounding. We'll take a look around the room, taking in deep breaths, breathing slowly. You want to start looking at the walls. You want to start looking at the floor. And what we're going to do is we are going to engage our five senses right now. Smell, touch, sight, feeling, hearing. And we don't want to rush through this. This can actually take 20 to 30 minutes if you have the time to do this. You can even take longer if you find this is really something that you enjoy to do. This can actually be like a meditation in some way. I would probably maybe do this before you go to bed at night or before you go into a meeting or something that causes stress. It's something to really ground you. And what you would do is, for example, you would look at the ceiling. The ceiling is white. The floor is brown. And then you'll describe objects, sounds, textures, colors, smells, shapes, numbers, temperature. And you can do this, and it really starts taking the focus in and putting it what's going on the outside, and it takes it away from the anxiety. And if you're on the, for example, on the subway, I'm on the subway, I'll see the river soon. Those are windows. This is the bench. The metal bar is silver. The subway map has four colors. And why, you know, this might sound a little like, what does this do? I don't understand. It sounds pretty too simple. But what it does, it takes you out of the anxiety, and it starts giving you confidence. And I think what happens with the breathing too, physiologically, you're slowing down your heart rate. By doing the mental grounding, you're slowing down the racing thoughts and you're gaining control and you're saying, okay, this is what I'm doing. Then another thing is you play categories, a game with yourself. Try to think of different types of monkeys. Name all the oceans, all the continents, different states, different TV shows. Maybe if you're a Giants fan or a Yankees fan, what years did they win? What were their scores? How many players are on the team? And I think it's all different things that you do that really, now this is stuff that you enjoy, so I think it really starts controlling what's going on. And as I said before, I have a lot of people that I tell to count back from 1,000. And again, if the thoughts come in, you stop the thought, and then you start back from 1,000. You can also do age progression, they say here, starting when you were 8 years old, then now I'm 9 years old, now I'm 10, and going back to different things. Also, if you are a cook, you like to cook or you like to bake, maybe pick one of your really tough recipes and start from the beginning. Say you like to make potato salad. How you would start is I wash the potatoes, I peel the potatoes, I cut the potatoes. I know it sounds very monotonous and what is this doing, but what it does, it's teaching your brain to slow down and it's teaching, you know, to keep taking the pain out of it and really guides you away from it so you can start feeling better. A lot of times people can do a safety statement. Even if, you know, a lot of this might be in the beginning just going through the motions, but I find it does work. A safety statement. You know, my name is Alexa. I am a good person. I am safe right now. I am in a safe place. There's an exit to the right. I am sitting in a chair. Really being able to kind of start reaffirming, and it's called, you know, self-soothing, saying the alphabet forward and backwards. I think very, very different things. But what you want to do while you're doing this is really doing it slowly. There's no rush to it. And I know sometimes when you're in an anxiety attack or in a fit of anger, things are sped up, your heart rate's up, so you kind of start really quick. That's okay. There's no right way to do this. There's no wrong way to do it. You're really going to make it your way and what really, really works for you. That's what's important. So try to slow it down. Also, a serenity prayer or any different Bible psalms or different things from the Bible, those are different things you can start saying too. So as you can tell, when you start doing this mental grounding, you should start feeling a little bit stronger. Now there's another part called the physical grounding. What this is where you're actually feeling, touching. What they said here is you can run cool or warm water over your hands, over your feet. Maybe, you know, if you're close to it, maybe wash your face with that. Grab tightly to your chair. Also maybe push your heels, dig your heels into the ground. Sit upright in the chair, touching various objects. This is a pen. This is my phone. This is a chair. Maybe holding onto the sides of the chair, squeezing your hands, opening your hands. And also squeezing your feet, opening your feet. What I also found is too, which can be very interesting, is going through all the muscle parts of the body. Maybe start with your toes. Wiggle one toe at a time. And it sounds like a lot of things do. Wiggle, squeeze. Then maybe move up to your calf muscles, stretch out your calf muscles, push them down, you know, going up towards your legs, tightening your muscles, loosening your muscles, then going to your abs, tightening your abs, loosening your abs, and then going to your fingers, going to your back, your shoulders, rolling your neck, opening and closing your eyes. I think this is really, I guess, bringing an awareness of what your body is feeling. And what I find, this is important because during anxiety, you know, either if it's the anxiety or the anger, we kind of lose touch of what our body feels. Like what we feel is the heart racing, the heavy breathing, the sweating, sometimes the need to go to the bathroom right away. So this will kind of slow all of that down. So as you can be aware of how fast the body moves, it's also being able to say how slow the body moves. And that in itself can be something very powerful later on of how you're feeling with that. If you're on a train and something happens, I have a lot of clients that have issues in going and closed in places because the fear of not being able to make it to a bathroom in time. And sometimes when you're on a train or if the train gets stuck, it could start triggering that. So I find that when people can use some of these grounding things, it really slows them down and gives them kind of a feeling of saying, you know what, I have control over this. And I think even walking slowly, counting each footstep, saying left and right, you know, really being aware of everything. And then also, if you can, going to the taste. Maybe eat something. Describe the taste of it. When is the last time you had this, if you can? Kind of really start saying, what are the flavors? And really explain in detail. And also when you're breathing, noticing the inhale, noticing the exhale. Also very making sure that you're becoming very, very self-soothing. And you want to make sure you're saying very self-soothing statements to yourself, very calm and, you know, very calm beliefs, calm things. Sometimes we have different affirmations, and I know in the beginning you might not believe it, but I think in time you will start to believe it. And I think just making sure you don't let those thoughts to come into your head and kind of say, you know what, it's not working. Give it some time. It might not work the first couple of minutes, and I know it gets very frustrating, it gets very upset, but allow it to take its course. Because I can tell you, after a couple of times doing this, and that's why I do have the rates, if you're rating yourself from 1 to 10, you can say, and we're not looking for to be at a 10 and then all of a sudden to be at a 1. We're not looking for that. We want to say, okay, if we're a 10, maybe we'll get to a 9.5. I think if you start with small stuff, those are changes, those are adjustments that will actually last longer. I also have clients that take with them their iPhone, their iPad, whatever, iPod. What if there's soothing music, they can. So if they know certain thing triggers them, they can listen to this song. And they can keep playing it, and it'll calm them down. Or sometimes you can have a little spray that sprays something, an air freshener or a perfume, something, you know, different things. Maybe the smell of the beach calms you down. Maybe the smell of the ocean. Maybe the sound of raindrops. And I think making sure you really prepare yourself. And I know it says, you know, this is a lot of stuff, but I think when you have anxiety in the beginning, it seems like it's a lot of stuff. But after a time, what I usually see is just, you know, maybe pulling that perfume or that spray out of your pocketbook, out of your pocket, will stop the anxiety. Instead of from the beginning, you had to spray it a couple of times, smell it, spray it, and maybe you went from like a 10 to a 9.5. But I would say, I'm pretty sure about 3 months down the road, just touching that spray, you'll notice from like a 10 to a 7 or a 10 to 6, different things. You'll start noticing huge accomplishments. And also saying different coping statements, as they say. This too shall pass. I am strong. I can handle this. I'm strong enough. I'm okay. And I think really being able to really sit and do the self-soothing. And also maybe plan something once you get out of the anxiety or the anger. Something to kind of treat yourself. Maybe have a nice piece of chocolate that you like, or you're going to see a nice movie, or go take, you know, a nice warm bath. But I think it's always making sure that you're thinking of something positive, something to look forward to, and kind of say, you know I said we're going to think in the present, but also, when you're coming towards the end, to say there's different things going on. So you can really make sure that this anxiety, this anger, doesn't define who you are. This doesn't define your experiences. It's not who you are, because I find sometimes when it's so strong, it is really, really hard to break out of it. And that's what I want you, with these exercises, I really want you to keep doing it so you build up your confidence. Now, right here it says, what if the grounding doesn't work? Well, what you want to do is you want to practice it and use it as much as possible. Now, you don't only do this when you're in the midst of anger or the midst of anxiety. You will be doing this when things are fine, when you're okay, because you want to kind of do this, that this is something that you're used to doing. And the more you do it, the better you get at it. And sometimes you can do it faster. So again, maybe the anxiety comes up and you see maybe this person or that subway or that bus triggers your anxiety. You can see it maybe a mile away, or you can even hear something coming, and you can say, okay, the walls are white, the floor is blue, I smell flowers, I hear cars, I hear buses, I hear music, I hear my breathing, I feel my jeans, I feel my sweater, I feel my phone in my hand, I taste spearmint, I'm chewing gum, I taste water, I taste coffee tasted hazelnut, and really going into these long, long details will help you get the strength. And again, as I said, there's no time limit. Longer the better. So don't try to rush it. If you start really feeling better, you can stay with it and keep repeating it and repeating it. And then also kind of take maybe afterwards, say, are you better at emotional grounding? Are you better at physical grounding? And then what it becomes kind of your own way, like a game that you have with yourself on how you're going to play with it, because it almost becomes fun. Because I think with anxiety, when you think of the anxiety attack happening, it's this whole negativity, this whole trigger, and just thinking about it gets you all worked up. So I think by thinking of this game, it's fun. Maybe next week you can look at something, you know, if you find a nice recipe on, if you're into cooking or baking, on the internet, and you can read over it, and you can read over it, and then say, you know what, I think I'm going to try and remember that recipe in my head, I need to get potatoes. I need to get sugar, quarter cup of salt. You know, what are my ingredients? And doing that, if it's not baking, maybe it's sports. Your favorite team is the Yankees. Who are the players? What positions do they play? What are their numbers? What are their stats? And going through that, because that is really empowering, and it's something you enjoy. And you know what? You're also learning. Say, maybe you're interested in some new topic of different things, different oceans, or different things on the internet. I had one client who looks up different types of dogs, different types of cats. What are their personalities? What are they good with? What do they like to do? Where are they usually from? What type of weather do they enjoy? And it becomes very, like, it's something also to talk about. So if you're with somebody and you're feeling the anxiety coming on, say, hey, I just read this great book on dogs, and this is what I'm saying. It kind of gives you something so you're not just kind of stuck with nothing else to say except the anxiety. And what is, you want to also start it early when you start feeling the negative feelings coming on. That might be a time to say, okay, let me start doing this. Or you can also start before it happens, as I said. Just keep doing it. Keep, you know, really practicing. This is something that you can't do enough of. It's very strong. It really empowers you. And also then there's something called the energy shield, the bubble technique. What different things are, you imagine yourself that there's some people use a white light. There's safety surrounding you. You are in a safe place, and you see that. So that also, that vision of it, also strengthens you and gives you the, you know, it kind of all of a sudden you see, you know, I guess when you were younger, some people had a special blanket or a teddy bear or something or a special shirt, or they smelt their mom's clothing, or they smelt a piece of something, like a piece of shirt or a piece of cloth, and that kind of soothed them. That's something, too, we would really want to do, is to be able, even if you don't have that anymore, maybe remembering that smell, remembering how it felt, and really saying, you know what, this is what it is. I think it's really strengthening yourself. I was also looking in the behavioral health news, but there was a whole part of cognitive behavioral therapy for anxiety by Lizette Dorfman. She said anxiety disorders cross all races and socioeconomic classes and can even affect our support systems, such as healthcare professionals, police officers, firefighters, first responders. In a given year, approximately 18.1% of Americans are diagnosed with an anxiety disorder. What I really wanted to say this about is that anxiety is not anything to be ashamed of. It shouldn't be a secret. It shouldn't be something. There's nothing wrong with you. It doesn't mean that you're weak. Why can't I get over this? What it's saying is there's something going on. And I think, you know, yes, we all have our different strengths and everything, but some things we can't do on our own. Sometimes we need assistance. And I think by taking the judgment away from it and saying, you know, I need help, I need to work on this, and saying this doesn't define me, it also gives you the ability to do this. What she goes on to say, the symptoms denoting an anxiety disorder may be divided into cognitive, affective, behavioral, and physiological. Cognitive symptoms can include hypervigilance, an ability to recall important things. I find a lot of people are saying, I can't remember things. I used to be able to memorize everything. I can't remember my own number. I can't remember the address of where I go to work. That happens. You're not going crazy. And I think people are like, oh my God, I'm going crazy. You're not going crazy. Take a step back and let's see what's going on. Being distracted, loss of objectivity, a fearful ideation. And it's so strong. Sometimes you can be impatient, tension, feeling frightened or alarmed. And behavioral symptoms can be illustrated by immobility, speech, impaired coordination, restlessness, hyperventilation. I mean, it's very, very strong. Heart racing, increased blood pressure, rapid breathing, startle reaction, insomnia, tremors, loss of appetite, abdominal discomfort, nausea, flushed face, sweating. So there's a lot of different things. I mean, this just isn't something that's been brought up in your mind. It manifests physically, mentally, emotionally. So I think when you really say, okay, this is what's going on, to be able to really address it and say, you know what, I need, you know, this is not something I can say, just get over it. I know a lot of people say, oh, don't worry about it, you know, get over it, just get stronger, you know, go running or something. Yes, exercise helps a lot too. But I think it's very, very hard to really identify it in yourself and say, you know what, this is what's going on. What she says, an anxiety disorder can be conceptualized as a hypersensitive alarm system. I love that. I find that a lot of my clients, they're, because the anxiety before struck out of nowhere. I mean, they could have been, everything was fine. They've never had an anxiety attack before. And then all of a sudden, boom, this feeling happens. And a lot of times, the first time people have an anxiety attack, they think they're having a heart attack. They think they're dying. And I mean, it's frightening. And they go to the emergency room and say, I don't know what's happened. This has never happened to me before. I think I'm having a heart attack. So it's really saying, you know, this is not something to be minimized. It's very, very serious. And in the beginning, yes, you have a hypersensitive alarm system. I love that. The anxious individual is highly sensitive to stimuli and is vigilant about potential or perceived dangers. See, now that's very important in anxiety because you kind of want to, you feel that if I prepare everything and I plan everything, I'll beat the anxiety. But sometimes when you prepare and you plan everything, that causes more anxiety because you're triggering it and you're thinking about it. And then, as we know, life is life. We can't plan everything. Things happen, which even, you know, are very, very scary. If you have everything planned and then something else happens, it can be very, very frightening. This individual experiences innumerable false alarms, which keep him or her in a constant state of emotional stress and turmoil. This preoccupation with danger is manifested by the involuntary intrusion of automatic thoughts whose content involves possible physical or mental harm. Again, I got this at Behavioral Health News, fall 2013. It's really, really an amazing thing how they describe the anxiety. It can be, as I said before, very crippling. And one thing I also said, one in four adults suffer from a diagnosable mental disorder each year, again from the Behavioral Health News, and one in five of your friends will have an emotional problem that may be too big for you to handle alone. Now, that's from the Mental Health Association. I mean, I think why I'm reading these stats is to say this isn't just about one person. This is a very, very serious to some point. It's not something that someone just made up in their mind that they can get over in a day. It's something that, you know, it's been proven. It's something you need a team to help you with. I think by using these tools I went over today can really help, you know, strengthen your confidence and also start lessening the anxiety. I also wanted to try something a little different tonight. What I find also sometimes with music, that it can really help you with the grounding. And I picked three songs tonight. And what the first song I was going to start with is Redeemed by Big Daddy Weave. And it talks about emotional pain. It talks about struggle. And during this song, in the beginning, I know it might be hard to kind of focus and get your thoughts in that area, but I almost want to start this grounding process in the beginning. So maybe I picked these three songs, Redeemed by Big Daddy Weave, Overcomer by Mandisa, and then our theme song that goes in and out, Every Good Thing by The Afters. During the first song, if you feel anxious, if you feel angry, if you even start to cry, make sure you keep in control of the breathing in, out, nice and slow. Try to focus on the present. Start, you know, the grounding, holding the chair, breathing through. And I feel fine by going towards the second song. And by the third song, I would hope to feel that you start to feel a little bit more of strength, a little bit more, again, it's finding the peace within the chaos. And then if these songs work for you, maybe this is something you can carry with you. Or, you know what, you can pick your own songs. But I just wanted to really, really start out with this and see how it works. So let's start with our first song, Redeemed by Big Daddy Weave. Here's Big Daddy Weave.
Seems like all I could see was the struggle. Haunted by ghosts that lived in my past.
Thank you.
everyone. I hope you enjoyed those three songs. Again, it was Redeemed by Big Daddy Weave, Overcomer by Mandisa, and Every Good Thing by The Actors. Before we end our show tonight, I would like just to give our journaling exercise. Our exercise tonight is write down a goal for the day, for the week, for the month, and for the year. These goals don't have to be connected. They don't have to be related. They can actually be maybe a work goal, maybe a health goal, maybe an emotional goal. And I think it's really just keeping open and doing what you feel is what you need to be working on. And again, no judgment, no stress. This is, again, free writing, free journaling, and just being able to set goals for the day, the week, the month, and the year. I wanted to thank everyone again for listening tonight to Insight into Healing. If you have any questions, you can send your questions to insightintohealing@gmail.com, or you can also check out Insight into Healing on Facebook and give us a like, and you will get the latest updates, what's going on with the shows, upcoming topics, and also any of the important information that I have talked during the show. I will definitely put different websites and email addresses for anyone you need to contact. Again, thank you so much for listening to the show, and thanks for bearing with me there with the music. It's my first time introducing music tonight to the show, so I'm still learning as everybody else is. So everybody, have a great night. Good night, and God bless. Bye-bye.